where she translated. Sorry. Hopefully we'll test the levels. Looks good. This is Lou Anne Johnson, and it's the 24th of June, 1999, and I am interviewing Luis Solis, and we are in the Barnes & Noble store in Bowling Green, Kentucky. This is for the Immigrants of Bowling Green Oral History Project, and there will be background noise, intercoms, cash registers, and other customers. Thank you for meeting me, Luis.
No problem.
So tell me a little bit about where your family is from.
My family is originally from Mexico. It's almost near the coast of Mexico, actually. And they lived here. I mean, my grandparents were born, raised there. My mom was born and raised there until she was like 35, and she moved up here. She was like 26. She had me at the age of 25. I didn't meet my mom until I was 4 years old because she was here in California, and she took me down there, and I spent 4 years of my life, my first 4 years of my life with my grandparents, so I consider them like my parents. So.
What region in Mexico was it?
It's a place called Michoacán.
Where?
Michoacán.
Can you spell that for me?
It's hard to spell. I probably get it wrong there. If I write it down, I might get it.
Okay, let me get a pen out. So where was your father?
My father, he's from Michoacán, too. I didn't meet him till I was 14. I met him for the first time, but I realized, me and him had nothing in common, and so I stayed away from him, and he stayed away from me.
So he wasn't there earlier in your life?
He was never a part of my life, and to this point, he's not. You know, I met him once, and that wasn't, you know... I decided that my life was a lot better without him in my life. So.
So it was your mother's grandparents, or your mother's parents who you spent 4 years with when you were little?
Yeah. They took care of me. I mean, they're my mom and dad as well, so I got two moms, so it's kind of hard on Mother's Day. I have to buy two gifts.
Do you get to visit them a lot?
I've been here since August, I haven't been here that long, and I've already gone to California once already, and I'm going to head out there probably in August again. I'm going to be there for a week or a couple of weeks or so. But yeah, I like, you know, I get along better, I guess, away from my family. You know how that goes.
Yeah. So you're young. Can I ask you your age?
I'm 18.
Okay. And now you were born then in Bakersfield, California?
No, I was born in Fresno, California.
Fresno, California.
Yeah, born in Fresno. I was like 8 months old. My mom took me to Mexico and left with my grandparents. And she came over here to work to get enough money to get my grandparents over here. And sure enough, 4 years later, she had enough. And I came here and I met my mom. It was kind of weird because I called her lady at first. Cause I didn't know. But I still remember calling her lady and stuff. But then she's my mom, so now I'm just glad she did all she, you know, at first I kind of regretted that she left me down there, you know, I was just like, man, that's not right, you know, but then I realized the situation that we were in, we're not, you know, because they were immigrants from, you know, my parents and stuff are immigrants from Mexico, so, I mean, they had it tough, and, you know, I was there to, you know, see them go through all the problems, racial issues, not getting in employment because of, you know, not having the right documents and stuff, which is, it's really hard, but, you know, they made it through.
So what were some of the reasons your mother decided to leave Mexico?
Basically, too many people were against our family because our family, we come from, people that we're the type of people that we're farmers. Okay, in Mexico, my grandparents were farmers. They had sheep, goats, you know, cows and everything, and that's how they made their money down there. They were always good in money. I mean, they never had a problem. I mean, money wasn't the issue why they moved. It was just too many jealousy. A lot of people didn't like our family for X reasons. My mother got raped when she was really young, and she was afraid, you know, that to encounter the same guy again, and, you know, it was just too much violence down there. She just figured that it would be a better life for us, as our, you know, the children and stuff. So she decided to come down here, and, you know, get to school here and everything, you know, just, you know, become, you know, what we are today.
So your grandparents then came up, moved up to California as well?
Yes. Yes, they moved, when I moved in, I got here when I was 4, and they came probably like 2 years later. They came down here, and they've been here since. I mean, I don't know what Mexico looks like anymore.
You don't?
No, I don't. I wish I did, though.
Do you have a lot of relatives still there?
Yes, I do, but I, like I said, I don't know them, and, you know, last time I was there was 4 years old, so.
Okay. Do you have plans to visit ever?
Yes, actually, I'm going in November. I'm going to Mexico, and, I'm interested in the arts, you know, the ruins and stuff like that, you know, Aztec ruins and everything. That's my, you know, my thing in art, because, you know, that's where, what I've always done, and, you know, it's just, I just think I have a spirit of, you know, the Aztec artist stuff, so.
Great, I want to talk to you more about that, because I wanted to see what your influences were, but first I want to find out how you made it to Bowling Green.
Okay, I graduated out of high school. I was airbrushing, doing my money here and there, just airbrushing. I was going to fairs and had a little spray booth there. And, I mean, I made pretty good money considering my age and, you know, in California, you know, because there, the high just cost of living down there is incredible. You know, you probably heard or something. I don't know if you've been down there, but it's incredible down there with, you know, laws and everything. And, I was airbrushing, and, you know, I was spending my money with my friends. There's too many temptations down there. I mean, it's just a big, you know, California is a big city. I mean, it's a big state, you know, and there's things here and there to spend money on. And so I would make my money to spend it, you know, and I wasn't, you know, going to college or anything, which, you know, college is nothing, you know, I'm not interested in college at this moment, you know. I'm not ready for it, so I figured I'll stay away from it. And sure enough, you know, my brother has moved over here because of some problems down there. I don't know how. Well, actually, the company Eagle Industries was in Bakersfield originally, and they moved down here. And when they moved, my sister-in-law's sister moved here. And so my sister-in-law and my brother decided to move to Kentucky, and they had been here for a year. And they called me up, and I was out of high school. You know, I was bored, and, you know, young and everything, and I wanted to travel. You know, that's my thing. I gotta travel. And so they said, you want to come over to Kentucky and live here for a while and see what, you know, what you can do down here. And I was like, fine. So I moved down here, and here I am.
Oh, wow. So you've been in town since August?
Yeah. Since August here in Bowling Green, yes. And I've already, you know, drove all over Kentucky and Tennessee. I like it.
Okay, great. How have you settled in? How have you?
It's kind of hard, because it's Kentucky. I mean, in general, it's backtracked. You know, it's just technology is not as. I mean, there's not that many people. You don't see a lot of things that you would see in California because of the big, you know, just the state that it is. You know, Bakersfield is like an hour and 45 minutes from LA, which, you know, connects it to one of the biggest cities and, you know, and craziest cities in California. So, you know, you see you see from people to, you know, the weird cars. I mean, just the environment that you're in is totally different from Kentucky and, you know, all these other states, because over there, we are majority. We're not a minority, you know. A Hispanic person is a minority. I mean, it's a majority. And here in Kentucky, we are minority. Because, you know, I don't know if you understand this or not, but, you know, in California, there's just too many Hispanics, you know. And here in Kentucky, you know, you hardly rarely see, you know, Hispanic people. Now you see it a lot more, but, you know, when I it's kind of weird. It is a sudden change from, you know, fast cities and stuff like that, from technology and, you know, just laws that you couldn't imagine. And you come to Kentucky and everything's just so calm, and, you know, you can leave your car unlocked, for instance, you know. That's something that's really like, whoa. And the weather and everything is so green down here. It's just, I like it here. And it's kind of hard to settle down living all your life in California, having all your friends. I mean, everything, you move down here and it's, you know, I'm kind of lost, you know, how to start all over, you know, meet new people and stuff like that, which is a, you know, it's a challenge. And, you know, it's a It's nice to meet new people and stuff like that. And, you know, I have a thing. I like to talk a lot, as you know it is.
No, that's just, I like that too. That's fine. Well, so how would you describe, what was one of some of the biggest differences then, as far as becoming part of a cultural community here in Bowling Green?
Biggest thing is the food that we eat. Okay, we are known by tortillas and stuff, you know, and here, you know, you can't buy them, you know. Now you can, but I heard that, you know, when I got here, you couldn't find them. You can find a tortilla at a store down in California. You go to a store, and there it is, and here is tortilla, and I asked for tortillas, and they gave me, you know, chips. I'm like, that's not what I'm asking for. But, I mean, there's little things that, you know, just it's a big change, you know, as far as culture and stuff like that, you know. The way people do things here, such as in Christmas, I see a lot more people united here than down there. I see a lot more of friendly people, I could say, down there. Everybody's, you know, just, everybody's scared of everybody. That's what it is here. I mean, you're more calm and, you know, just, I mean, the culture here is just seems to be that, you know, calmness and, you know, kindness.
Yeah.
And in California, you just don't have that.
Okay. Well, what kind of racial situations did you deal with in California, and what compared them to any that you may encounter here?
In California, I've encountered a couple of situations. You know, not much, because, like I said, California is full of Hispanic people. So, I mean, it's hard, you know. You can't really get, you know, racial issues down there. But I have encountered a couple in California. One time I was in school, and a security guard. And I was into the gang thing and everything, you know, when I was, you know, like, I was 14, and I was into the gang thing. And they had a gun in my pocket, in my backpack, and I got caught with the gun. And, I mean, the security guard told me you had to be Mexican. And I felt like, you know, wait, what does that mean, you know? I felt like tiny, you know, when he said that and stuff, you know. But as a smart mouth like I always was, I responded back to it, and I told him, well, I go, if I was a Mexican, would you have to say that statement? And he didn't say anything, and I went to the office, and when they interviewed me and everything, and, you know, how to tell him what would happen and everything, I explained to him what he had said. Here in Kentucky, I've encountered a couple times. I mean, I just feel it, you know. There's places where I've gone and gone into a restaurant and felt like everybody turned around and looked at me and saw me as, you know, oh, God, you know, this guy's coming in, you know. And I have felt like I am, you know, I like what I am, a minority and stuff. I have felt like it, and it doesn't feel too good, but I've learned that it's not important to me what they think. It's important what I think, and it's important where I come from. And I'm not going to forget who I am or where I come from just because somebody doesn't like my, you know, my background or my skin or, you know, whatever. I mean, I'm proud of who I am and where I come from, where my parents come from and everything. And, I mean, that's my background. So, you know, I'm going to stick to it. You know, I can't change it. You can't erase it like you can, you know, something you write down, you know. So you just stick with it and, you know, just pray for the best and, you know, see what comes out of that.
So that's a very good point. What kind of things, I imagine in California, being in an area where the Hispanic population is large, it's a lot that cultural traditions are surround you everywhere.
Yes.
What types of traditions and customs and values were important that to your family to keep going after they moved to America?
Moving down here in California, there's not that many changes of culture. I mean, everything stays the same, basically, because you have a community where, you know, it's basically, you know, California is just so full of, you know, Hispanics that, you know, most of them have the same cultures, you know, Mexicans and Honduras and, you know, people from other, you know, countries from down South America. They have basically the same, you know, like Christmas, You know, we have certain, you know, things that we do for Christmas, it's just, it was, you know, it was important for my parents to, you know, conserve the way they celebrate Christmas by cooking certain foods, tamales, for example, cooking, you know, wait until 12 o'clock to open all the presents, you know.
Midnight?
Yeah, midnight. Everybody waits until midnight to open their presents and stuff. So. And, you know, New Year's Eve, staying up and spending time with the family at the table and talking about what your resolution might be. And when it strikes 12, you know, hug everybody, Happy New Year, and then go grab a cup of water and throw it behind your back outside for good luck. Little things like that, which my parents, you know, always done, you know, they didn't change much, you know. They didn't change much just because they were here, you know. They start celebrating like Thanksgiving. We never, you know, Mexico, they don't know what Thanksgiving is. They have other holidays, but they don't have that one.
And what holidays did they continue up in the States? Like Cinco de Mayo or?
Oh, Cinco de Mayo is not something we really celebrated in my family. It's but it is, you know, a lot of people don't know what that means. Even our own people don't know what it means. You know, and so it's like, it's just an excuse to party, basically. Yeah.
What about up in the States? Is that how it played out?
That's the way I see it. That's the way I see a lot of things. A lot of people celebrate Cinco de Mayo, for example. That's one of the holidays that they conserve and stuff. And, you know, it's just an excuse to party and, you know, go out and have fun or whatever. But, you know, most of the people that, you know, because I used to ask everybody, so what does that mean? What does it mean to you? Do you know what it means? Do you know why they're celebrating this? Yeah, Mexico's independent. I'm like, don't talk Mexico's independent. That's another date. I don't know the date of it, but
November 12th, maybe.
November 12th, yeah, November 12th. Cinco de Mayo is just when Mexico defeated in a battle Napoleon's troops and stuff, so they just celebrate that. You know, it's bigger than the Independence Day, I think. But yeah, they kept that one, and I don't know if there's any Mother's Day.
Mother's Day.
It is always the 10th. It's always the 10th. I mean, no matter if it's on Monday, Tuesday, if it's the 10th, it's Mother's Day. So that's what we always celebrate it on the 10th. So.
So in Kentucky, how have you and your relatives settled in celebrating traditions or maintaining?
Well, it's extremely hard with the fact that we're always working and stuff, and you know, we really don't have all the family united together so we can celebrate it. But we do remind each other that it's a certain day or a certain, you know, we try to keep up with the, you know, the cooking and, you know, during Christmas, the tamales or whatever. But, I mean, they still forget about it, you know. It's not as exciting without a family because it's only me and my brother. And so, you know, this past Christmas, nothing, you know, we just stayed home. I went to sleep early, you know, because I had to work and stuff like that. And I'm always, you know, into my art and everything, so. It just kind of faded away, but I know that if I was in California, then I would be with my family, and we'd be celebrating like we always do every Christmas. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to let go, and during these holidays, it's just another day for us because we don't have our family here, so we don't celebrate that much.
So tell me about where you're working and what you're doing there.
I work at Eagle Industries, and I am their graphics man. I do all the graphics, all the airbrushing, all the artwork that needs to be done. I do it. I've been doing the trail of their fleet of trailers. I've already done about 40 or 50 trailers. That's, you know, for my age, is kind of whoa.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun. I mean, I get paid pretty good. They started me at $11 an hour, and I get benefits, and, you know, holidays paid, vacation and everything, and you know, anything that I need, you know, I'm my own boss. I don't have anybody telling me, hurry up, come to work, you know. I go to work, get my stuff done, and they pay me for my work, and, you know, that's the way it goes. It's pretty fun. I mean, it's cool having a job like that at 18. There are a lot of 18-year-olds have a job like that. So.
When did you get interested in art?
I was interested in art probably about when I was 13.
How did you start?
I had a lot of friends in California, which, you know, were into the gangs and everything, and they did a lot of gangster little drawings and stuff, kind of stuff like you saw in Richard's room. That's the kind of stuff I started off drawing. And I used to ditch from school, get away out of school just to go draw in the parks and stuff just to improve, you know, show off in front of my friends, like, oh yeah, check this out, I drew this, you know, but it would take me, you know, basically 8 hours to draw something that was really simple. But, you know, throughout that, you know, just every day, you know, sitting down drawing and, you know, just learning different things, talking to the guys, you know, most of them gangsters and everything, but, you know, there are true artists, you know, out there that, you know, they just, they got off their butt and got off the drugs, they could make a lot of money because of their talent. But, you know, like I said, drugs and, you know, California is just a temptation that, you know, it's like a drug. And if you get caught in that little wave, you're going to go along with it. And, you know, I was heading that way, but, you know, fortunately, I just turned around and said, that's not for me, you know. I've become real good at art, so I'm going to keep on doing it and make money out of it. And I saw that I could make money out of it, and I made a lot of money. I made an average of $8,000 in my sophomore year in high school. And I mean, for a sophomore in high school, that's a lot of money.
So what kind of ambitions do you have with your artwork?
Towards my artwork, I want to make an impression. I want people to know what I do. I want people to look at my artwork and say, wow, you know, a young kid did that. Or, you know, my goals are, you know, I couldn't tell you a goal that I have. I just want to do it, and I want people to enjoy it. I want people to, you know, I just want people to stop and look. And, you know, send a message out there that, you know, no matter how old or where you come from, you can do something in this world, you know.
And then you mentioned earlier some of your influences, or that you tie some of your art style to your heritage.
Yes, I do. Most of my original pieces, because right now most of my artwork is, you know, done by doing other illustrations that some other artists do. That's how I get my money and stuff. But my own original artwork, when I start, you know, for myself, you know, because right now I paint for people. But when I paint for myself, I do Aztec images and stuff like that. You know, it's just something I've always, it's a culture in California, you know. Most of the kids down there like to draw it, and I started drawing it. But along with the drawings, I started studying about the history, about, you know, where we come from, and, you know, how everything happened, you know, and why are the pyramids there, or why is this god named this, and why is that other sun god named that, you know. So I started studying them, and I got together with people that, you know, were going to college and studying, you know, his Chicano studies, as they call it down there in college. And I made a lot of research, and I saw their artwork, what they used to do back then, and it's amazing. I mean, it just moved me, and I was just like, this is the kind of stuff I'm going to be doing. And so I started making artwork. One of my first paintings is sitting at one of the school's main buildings and stuff. They decided to keep it because they were impressed with the painting and stuff. So. But yeah, that painting, oh god, that's a good painting. That painting got me $20,000 to go to school, and it got me a lot of recognition in California. And I mean, I was doing all right. I mean,
but you didn't decide to go to school.
No, I decided to stay off of school because, like I said, I'm not ready for school. I'm 18, and I was gonna go to school. If I would have gone, I would have gone to school, and I would have dropped out. I didn't have the hunger to go to school. I was tired of high school already as it was. I mean, I was going probably about 2 days a week to school, and I was just going to art class. And I mean, all my teachers gave me slack because of who I was and because of what I did, and which I thought was wrong, you know. And I thought it was unfair that, you know, I got a special treatment just because I knew how to do art and stuff, you know. I went to my classes, and I was just like, nah, I got to be like the rest of the students, you know. But I couldn't, so... Like I said, temptations out there, and I mean, I just decided to stay away from college for a while, and whenever I feel I'm ready, and I don't think, you know, somebody, you can only learn so much from somebody else, the rest, you have to, I mean, you can read many books, I mean, you know, years and years, but if you don't get your hands dirty, you're not going to learn anything. You know, that's the way I saw it, you know, that's the way I see college. You know, you have to take a lot of classes which have nothing to do with art, you know, which are a waste of my time, and, you know, I just don't want to take them, so, you know, I decided I'm going to wait, and when I'm ready to go to college, I'll just take a class which is related to nothing but art, you know, I want to, you know, just concentrate on one thing and not, you know, get my focus on, you know, start doing physics or whatever, you know, I'm not, that's not my stuff, so, you know, I'm going to stay away from other fields and just concentrate on what I am, because, I mean, our, when you were down in the when the Aztecs were their prime and stuff, what they used to do is when a child was born, they would assign them something. They'd be like, okay, this guy's going to be an architect. And that's all he did for the rest of his life. He would not pick up, you know, even if, you know, they would break something for the king, he would not go over there and clean it up because that wasn't his job. His job was to do nothing but architecture or nothing but, you know, art. So that's the way I see my life. I'm going to stick to one thing, and, you know, I saw college as a, you know, I just think college would have screwed, you know, would just, my language, but it would would mess me up. It would mess me up, you know, towards what I wanted to do, and it would confuse me. So I said, I'm going to stay away from college till I got my head, and I know what I want to do, you know, until I know what my goal is, because sincerely, I don't know what, you know, I really want to do. I'm doing what I'm doing, and, you know, just, but, you know, if I would have gone to college, there's nothing that they can give you. They can tell you, well, you're this good now, you know. I've met a lot of guys, you know, they spent 8, 10 years in college, and, you know, it's just, they haven't learned anything, you know, and I see it's a waste of money. That's why I'm not going yet.
Okay. Well, so how long do you think, are you planning on staying in Bowling Green for a while?
Yes, I got, like I said, I'm doing this, these fleets, this truck, that's going to keep me busy at least for another year or 2 years. But I will be here for another 2 years, probably 2 or 3 years, depending. But if I change my mind, I'll probably stay here. I don't know, but, you know, probably another 2 years.
Okay. And then where are some of the places you'd like to go or things you'd like to do?
I got to travel overseas. I got to go to go check out Michelangelo's work. I got to go check out the great artists, you know, that made the art, you know, made art. I got to go down to, you know, South America and stuff like that, you know, just see the ruins and everything. That's my thing. That's my passion and stuff. But after that, I plan to, you know, travel, come back and open up my business down in California. That's what I want to do. Have a business. I got a friend that's been sitting there waiting for me, and he's still waiting for me to open up a business with me, and because we used to airbrush together, and we did all right, but, you know, we were young and everything, so we didn't have the money to back us up either, and we had something going too, so, and I got to go back and, you know, kind of finish what I started, so that's what I plan to do after Bowling Green, I guess. I hope so.
All right. Well, start wrapping up, because they're going to be closing up here pretty soon. So, the idea that this is going to go in the archives, it's kind of a marking the history of just this process of different communities growing in Bowling Green. Is there anything that you'd like to add that we haven't talked about yet, or any sage advice for future generations, or any stories that stand out to you as being part of your heritage?
Well, just never forget where you come from and who you are, because that's where everything is. I mean, the world can keep on growing and growing, and technology can keep on going, but no matter what, you know, you're still going to be the person who you are because of your heritage, because somebody back then did something, and it caused that little thing, you know, certain religion, or cost certain, you know, made something else, which, you know, makes the person that you are today. You know, a lot of people forget, like I said, where we come from, and that's the problem. They get, you know, lightheaded and stuff, you know.
How do you remember?
I just remember my parents working in, you know, the fields and stuff like that, getting paid, you know, nothing, basically, being slaves to, you know, So, I mean, I just saw them struggling. I went out there and I worked myself. I worked. I've been working since I can remember. And it's not the funnest thing to go out there and work in a field and get paid $5 an hour, which California is one of the most expensive places to live. And you can't make it out there and struggling with the rent and everything. And, I mean, and once you get older and then you start making money, you forget, well, you know, I used to struggle this and that, you know. I don't forget that my family struggled to get here. I didn't forget that my family, you know, made all those sacrifices for me to, you know, go to school and get an education and, you know, become the person who I am. I mean, just, that's one thing that I want to tell people. Don't forget who you are and where you come from, because that's where everything is at. Yeah, that's where, I mean, heart and soul and everything is who you are, you know. And people don't like it, don't worry about it. It's not for them, it's for you. You want to be who you are and do it. And if you've got a dream, just go for it, you know. Live it, you know. Just try your hardest and don't give up and don't let anybody take you down, because that's something that happened to me. A lot of people would tell me that I wouldn't do anything, that I wasn't going to do anything in my life, that, you know, that I was just another Hispanic, you know, coming up and stuff, you know, and just, I was just going to get paid so much an hour, I wasn't going to get past, you know, being a gardener or, you know, whatever, and so that motivated me instead, and so I decided to show people who I am, and one of these days when I see the world and, like, the world's got their eyes on me, I'm going to let them know, you know, I made it, and, you know, here I am, and I want people to know that, you know, if I can make it, anybody can make it, you know. I'm not special, I'm not something out of the ordinary. I'm just a normal person. I got blood, it's red like everybody else, and just because I come from, you know, Hispanic, Mexican parents, and, you know, stuff like that, doesn't mean that I'm different. You know, I may have a culture that's different, but I'm still a person. And, you know, people should treat other people as what they are, people. That's pretty much what I got to say.
Okay. Thank you so much for meeting me.
All right. No problem.
We'll end now.